Hello and welcome to the Linux Lads. Don't expect us to be on form today, guys, because you know it's fucking Monday, innit? yeah, as usual, we are the Linux Lads. I'm Shane.
I'm Connor.
I'm Mike.
And we are also joined by a very fancy special guest, DM from PowerShell on Linux fame.com.
Hey.
I don't know, is it just a website or is it the Telegram group or
yeah,
what is it?
It's yeah, it's both.
It's all things at once. It's a quantum phenomenon.
It's a quantum shell.
So, without further ado, Mike has some news.
Yeah, we got a cat. It's not a quantum cat. It's undeniably alive. And physics joke. Physics joke.
Nerd.
I mean, we got a cat. She got us, obviously, as it is. So she got two slaves to fuss about her, give her food.
That is our role.
Clean after her and everything. And she just sleeps 20 hours a day and eats and plays. That's the life. If I get reincarnated, please, I want to be a domestic cat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's a bit of Linux in that as well. I downloaded, I thought, okay, I need to keep an eye on her, but she lived for a few first days. She was in the shower room because, you know, small space that she can control. So I used a Raspberry Pi with a camera and a piece of software called Motion. It was incredibly easy to install, set up, and everything. And within like 5 minutes, I had basically a CCTV streaming on my LAN that I could log in from any device in my browser and just see what the cat was doing. So yeah, that's amazing. Link's gonna be in the show notes, obviously. Not to the cat videos, that's private, but to the Motion software. I put a lot of photos on Twitter, so if anybody follows me on Twitter, I don't know why you should, but if you really want another person posted photos of their cat, then yeah, sure, follow me on Twitter.
That fretting about the cat's health and worrying about the cat constantly, that is normal, but it goes away within 3 months, don't worry. Now we just literally leave the back door open, even though it's cold as shit in Dublin right now, we just leave the back door open constantly so she can just go in and out and do whatever she wants. We don't even put a collar on her. Anymore because she keeps losing.
we won't do that. We are on the second floor, so yeah. Even though she could probably
she'll survive the fall, no problem. So on my end, I have been blendering a lot more recently, and I made a cool little discovery. It's not open source and it's not Linux related, but it's in the same vein and the same spirit. It's called SheBit Render Farm. So if you have a Blender file, I had a little animation that I made for a friend's music for YouTube, and the animation I made was going to take like 3 or 4 days on my computer. So yeah, SheBit came in handy. It was rendered and all in under 12 hours. It would have been even quicker, but it was really large and it's on a point system. So it's really cool. You download a client, you need to have Java installed. But you download a client and you render like 10 of other people's frames in their project. And then it's a points-based system. So it will still render your shit. But if you know, you have to give as much as you take. Obviously, there's a points-based system and it prioritizes your frames based on that.
Oh, so it distributes the workload.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It chops up your animation into frames and then sends it to other people's computers. And
kind of peer-to-peer, so...
Yeah, exactly. It's all peer-to-peer. It's not centralized at all. And it's free as well.
It seems to be like it uses the same concept as folding at home. It just uses other people's GPU to render stuff.
Mm. It's a peer-to-peer render farm, basically. But it's really good, really cool kind of community. And you can earn rewards and badges and stuff for like rendering like so many frames in a day or... one continuous render session, blah, blah, blah. There's all sorts of achievements. So I'm kind of a bit of a whore for that. So I've been leaving my computer just rendering other people's stuff for days on end just to get the rewards. But there's a benefit to it as well because you earn points and that prioritizes your frames the more points you have. So your renders will be quicker then once you go to do it. So there's logic to it. A bit of shameless self-indulgent self-promotion. I have put my referral link, which gives me extra points, and I'm going to put those in the show notes. But if you don't really want to indulge me, I understand. Just go to sheepit-renderfarm.com.
It looks like they also have like a Linux client, a Mac client, and a Windows client.
Yeah, yeah. It's
Java, right?
Java, so it runs everywhere.
Queue in a couple of months, Shane getting a top-end Threadripper CPU.
just for red herring.
just purely because he feels so enamored with this community and he wants to render all of the things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, funny you should say that. I am actually planning a new build in the new year because my viewport performance in Blender, it kind of sucks now. So not the rendering end of things, it's the viewport when you want to look around your thing in a semi-rendered view. It's just so noisy. It just goes, blah, turns into noise when you move. So just
as AMD 5000 series drops. So good timing.
I'm not going to go right top shelf, but I think like a 3070, 3080 or something would be fine. With a Ryzen 7 or 9 or something.
I'll get the new generation, but yeah, there'll be different tiers within that generation.
Yeah, and the cost to performance ratio is crazy nowadays. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a buyer's market. But anyway, Connor.
Yeah, for various reasons I won't get into, mainly because Monday hit me like a ton of bricks. I was up late over the weekend and I didn't get much sleep. So apologies if I'm a bit out of it this episode, but I'm running on about 5 or 6 hours sleep. So that's my own fault.
Me too. That's why I said fucking Monday, innit? So on to some stories and things to talk about. The YouTube DL repo is finally back up after all the shenanigans.
Yeah, this is fantastic news. People obviously remember that the RIAA, which is the American people who look after copyright, they ask GitHub to take down YouTube DL, which is a software many people use to download video files, not just YouTube, but others. And it looks like there's going to be a big issue out of it because, you know, they were quoting the American Digital Millennium Copyright Act that basically prohibits, and they were basically saying that the YouTube DL, they have got some examples of downloading things that are actually copyrighted in their code and help files, and that should go. But also that they circumnavigate the RM protections. That was like their major thing, you know, that YouTube DL not circumnavigates, circumvents. Thank you. Help the non-English speaker. The RIA was saying that YouTube DL circumvents DRM protections, and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, among other people as well, I think, stepped in, sent a letter to, or an email, obviously, to GitHub saying, no, it doesn't. Everything that they use is made available by Google. In the case of YouTube, everything they use is publicly available information. They don't hack it. They just use what's already in there. And GitHub was more than happy from their blog post that's going to be in the show notes. They were more than happy then to oblige to reinstate a YouTube DL where they should be. And they also put up a big blog post about why they did it initially and what led to the reinstating and what is the logic behind the takedown and what is the logic behind declining the takedown. It's an interesting post. There's one very interesting thing that came out of it as well that I wasn't expecting. Apparently the DMCA is used by open source developers to protect against what sound like GPL violations. Basically, if somebody steals your code, like you release something under a copyleft license, somebody uses it against the license terms, you can use the DMCA, if I understand it correctly. I'm also quite tired as well. So, you can use the DMCA to protect your open source code, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I suppose what didn't help them, I think we mentioned this in the last time we mentioned it as well, but what probably didn't help them was the fact that they have YouTube in the name. I mean, if they could say, hi guys, we're renaming it, it's still the same code, but we're just renaming it to something else, they I'm not saying they would get any more legal pings from the DMCA, but if they just do like a Kodi rather than calling it Xbox Media Center or whatever, and then having somebody's brand name in your name, then just rename it, whereas it's still the same code, still the same project, might do them some stead in the future. But for the time being, yeah, it's good that they're back, and it's good that you're able to use it for downloading your various cat videos and stuff like that on YouTube. I was trying to think of what was the Big Buck Bunny. That's the one that's the completely and utterly copyright free. So yeah, you can get your Big Buck Bunny from YouTube, even though you can probably just get it for free off the website anyway.
I think it's great that it looks like GitHub also revised their DMCA takedown policy to be a little bit more on the developer side, and before taking the repo down, to work with the developers to try fix things instead of deleting the repo and you know.
They are also establishing a developer defense fund and putting $1 million in it to help protect open source developers on GitHub from unwarranted DMCA section 1201 takedown claims. So basically, if something like this happens again, there's money for it.
So they can take our code, but they'll never take our freedom.
I was just going to say, cue people tweeting at us in reference to that with $.
It's funny how it goes in circles. You know, I remember Balmer on stage screaming, "Developers, developers, developers, developers." Yeah, I mean, they he was right. I mean, he was weird and creepy and sweaty and disgusting, but he was right to care about developers, because those are the ones who create the ecosystem in which your product thrives. That's why I assume Microsoft bought GitHub, right? So they have to look after developers, and a lot of the stuff that Microsoft uses and builds upon, and that and a lot of the stuff that's ultimately makes money for Azure and even Windows is open source. So like a million here, a million there, it's not that much, but it can help a lot. It's not much for Microsoft, it's a lot for me, but it's not much for Microsoft, but it would be a lot of for a developer who finds himself facing somebody with a lot of lawyers, like for example the RIA or whatever they are called.
Yeah, for sure.
And in other open source news, Mozilla, who are quite cash strapped at the moment, seem to be cutting quite back and donating parts of their projects to other things. So in the announcement is that Mozilla are giving Servo to the Linux Foundation. So Servo is their kind of their internal experimenting browsing engine that is supposed to be really fast. It is not what Firefox is based on, which is Gecko, but I think it's kind of their Skunk Works browsing engine, so they might take some lessons that they've learned from the Servo development and might integrate some of that into Gecko, which is their main browsing engine. Turns out that they can't sustain both of them at the moment, so they're donating Servo to the Linux Foundation, and it seems to be that several people, needless to say, Mozilla amongst them, are coming on board. Samsung and a few other places I'll get the exact list here at the moment. Let's Encrypt, Mozilla, Samsung, 3.js, and a few other people have. So it's kind of open development rather than it just all being within Mozilla's remit.
It's always great to see a new browsing engine. Well, I know it's not new. It's been around for a little while, but yeah, like Blink is just too powerful nowadays. And any alternative is good. I'm pretty sure I saw a demonstration of Servo in its infancy. I could be wrong. This could have been Gecko, but I was at FOSDEM and I was in the Mozilla track, and they were doing a demonstration, and the only thing, it was in its infancy, and they were showing, oh, look at the smooth scrolling. And they were like, oh, smooth scrolling, that's cool. I don't know. I honestly, when it comes to these really low level things, I'm an idiot. So
the upside of Servo is that it's written in Rust, so it's a more, like, it has Rust has a lot of features to make it more secure and handle, like, especially
I've heard several developers praise Rust, and I don't know, they tell me why, but I don't understand anything they're saying.
It has, like, more, from my understanding, it has more strict guidelines and stuff that it handles, like, exception or things that you didn't think of better.
What it does, basically, Rust is great if you are learning computing. If you want to be this low level and you start learning C, yeah, it compiles, and then your code breaks, then your application breaks because everything compiles. But in Rust, it's the opposite. If it compiles, it's good, it's brilliant, it's solid. Unless you obviously mess with the compiler or, you know, put the safe word in there, but if you mess up and it doesn't compile, the compiler is pretty good at telling you where you messed up, at least in the, like, you know, when in the beginner friendly examples, when you try compiling Hello World and stuff like that. It's a pain to learn if you come from Python, because, you know, it's not just it's way too far away from, like, your normal Python or JavaScript concepts.
It's a more strict language, and that's why it's more secure. So it's good to see, like, another engine that's open source, especially it's like a more secure engine, because obviously the web is full of naughty people.
That's an understatement.
But I don't know if the Linux Foundation is going to... So the idea hopefully is that Linux Foundation will keep developing it. People who need embedded browsers, like Samsung, for example, or people who need high-performance stuff, by people, I mean companies, can pool resources into that. And hopefully when things start coming out of it, Mozilla will still be able to adopt that, because I have a soft spot for Firefox, and if it became more secure and faster and everything, as it would be good. And Mozilla, obviously, as Connor said, they have to focus their activities, and they have to drop some things. So hopefully the Linux Foundation is going to be good steward of it, and hopefully it will prosper. We have another related, like Mozilla related, piece of news where Firefox 83 has been released. It has got some new features added to it, like you can now fill out PDF forms in Firefox, which is good, and you can set it to HTTPS only mode, so basically to protect yourself from those legacy HTTP only websites and people sniffing out traffic and so on.
That's weird. I haven't seen a HTTP site in so long. Have you?
Like, usually, like, your home router probably still uses, like, HTTP, but that's about it. Like,
any enterprise sites, like, if it's on an internal LAN, and if it was built more than 10 years ago, it's definitely HTTP. The idea is if there is a massive firewall and I don't know how many other layers of protection, and everybody has to either be in the office or VPN into it, and who cares about certificates? They are just another thing to break.
No, but if it takes credentials, if it sends any sort of information that's sensitive, like, you don't want anybody, like, within the organization to be able to sniff it. So everything should use HTTPS, really. But yeah, this is a good thing, I think. Many years, people were using, like, extensions like HTTPS everywhere for Firefox and Chrome and other browsers. So this is a good thing.
I'm one of those people who has HTTPS everywhere installed, yes.
Yeah, same here. I guess I can test it out and remove it now.
You'd have to have Firefox 83 just came out. I don't know what Firefox am I on. Everybody check your help.
I'm on 84.
Oh, yeah. I'm on 83. Well, yeah. You are on the beta, right? So how do I set it into HTTPS only mode? Let me break it.
Yes, let's do it live anyway, on the call.
Maybe
or the call. Yes.
The most because important already... feature, support for Apple Silicon.
Yeah. HTTPS only mode. It is here, right in the preferences. Enable HTTPS only mode in all windows or private windows. Okay, I'll just enable it and let's see what breaks first.
Yeah, exactly. Because I enabled, like, they had that do not track thing in a previous version, and then I found a whole bunch of sites just stopped bloody working.
And a whole other bunch of stuff just doesn't actually even care about it. They just.
Speaking of browser kind of independence and browser agnosticism, I don't know what you would call that. I had a real moment the other day that really made me see red. I was trying to get onto my like credit union banking thing, and I had an issue where I was logging in and I couldn't see anything on the screen. Like there was a very bare interface and it was like not pulling in something. Something was going wrong, and I contacted them and they were like, please make sure you're using Google Chrome. And I was like, what? Excuse me, sir. I will use any browser on the independent web, sir. And I was deeply offended. I was like, what is this?
Get yourself, this is going to be worse because Google are now, you know, the kind of embedded browser that you can use to like log in, or basically. Google are now going to, from January 21st or something, they are going to disallow people accessing Google assets from like kind of smaller browsers, like your Epiphany.
That's some bullshit right there. Like that's what I'm, that is 100% bullshit.
That's the downside of like having, like, that's exactly the reason why we need an alternative to the Blink engine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're more and more browsers are rebasing on Google technology, and you have to have like an alternative so they can't define their own standards and force everybody to use them.
Also, fucking AMP. Oh, I fucking hate it so much.
Oh yeah, screw AMP. This is why I obstinately use Firefox no matter what the situation. I'll be like, I'm using Firefox, you try and stop me. I just can't abide this tribalism on the web, whatever you want to call it, this bucketing of shit. Like, it's money ruins everything.
Yep. So give it to me.
so much so that I've chuckled to myself every single time that I've seen it. But when somebody on Reddit links an AMP page, somebody has written a bot that
convert it to the original link.
And then people are replying back to underneath it going, good bot.
or just convert it to the little poo emoji with the face on it. That's what I do. Web independence and open web, like, that's non-negotiable for me.
This is a segue and a half, and we're known for our smooth segues, but if you want a bit of Google independence, there's a new smartphone that looks really interesting, and it's up on Indiegogo, and as of this recording, there's 19 days left and they have over 700% of their flexible goal.
Ooh, it has a QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, it's a slide out QWERTY keyboard. Yeah. It supports Android out of the box because of course it does, but they're 100% open to, and I think they do have they've Lineage support, yeah. They've Ubuntu Touch support, and I think they might, I think I've seen renderings of it having Sailfish OS on it as well, but it doesn't seem to be listed here on their webpage, so it might have been an internal testing demonstration or something like that. But
the upside of it is, like, it's very repairable. Like you can screw, like you could use a regular screwdriver to unscrew a couple of screws and replace the battery, replace the screen, stuff like that. The only downside is that it has, well, an upside, depending on how you look at it, has like an older SoC. So the CPU in it is older. I think it's like the same SoC that's in the OnePlus 5, I think, or the OnePlus 5T. But they're saying the reason they picked it is because it has better Linux support. And they wanted to support like something that support, you know, that's not only that doesn't only supported by the Android kernel, which is a modified Linux kernel. But so it seems like a really good device. Like we don't have devices today, don't really allow you to, you know, order another battery and easily replace it and stuff like that. So it seems go ahead.
As I'm scrolling down here, I just wanted to correct myself. It says these familiar OSs are in development. More exciting news and developments to follow. So they do have the Sailfish logo. They do have the Debian logo, which is interesting as well. They seem to have the Microsoft Windows logo. I'm like, what are you trying to do here?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's the perfect form factor for that sort of keyboard. I think doing it with your thumbs, so long as you don't have to like mash the keys really hard, it should be okay. But like, yeah, you mash the keys too hard. And I have very large hands. Like, I challenge anyone to find hands that are big as mine. Like, it's weird. And like, seriously, and so like most things that are handheld are not made for me. So it is kind of nice because all phones were tiny for my massive hands.
I just imagined you having a phone going like a tablet to your ears and making phone calls.
Exactly. Yeah, I wanted the biggest phone possible because I just like constantly keep like pushing them out of my hands because they were just my big long ass fingers just trying to hold on to this tiny phone.
Well, get a foldable phone that's like, you know, one of those 2,000 euros.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, exactly. I never had one of these phones with a hardware QWERTY keyboard in them, and I really want to experience that again, but I'm not paying like 600 quid.
I actually, to be honest, my 7T was 600 quid.
Yeah, exactly. But I've already got a OnePlus 6T, and I'm not going to replace it anytime soon, and I'm not going to replace it with this, let's face it.
It's very promising hardware, so even though if we're not in the market for it,
it's too chunky though. Like I know it has a keyboard, but it's too thick.
I don't think it's that thick. I don't think it's that thick.
But like you go from this thick, you can't see it on the podcast, but that's pretty thin, and that's with a case on it.
It's not much thicker.
If you go from the top, right, you go from the Librem, which is from $2,000 down, between what, $700 and $2,000, depends which version you get.
And also...
That's uglier, chunkier, also, and has less specs. Yeah, that is a chunk, right? That's a brick. And that's...
Dick with two C's.
That is... yeah. And by the way, they shipped, finally, commercial version. Never mind that. So that is expensive. That has got less specs and looks worse, subjectively.
Oh, 100%.
Then you have the e-phones. They are, I think, depending which one you get, because those are refurbished Samsungs, I think. So it can be, I don't know if it's between 300 and 500. I don't remember. Those are okay, right? This one, it's a bit pricier, but then like if you ever try to run like Termux on Android, that's annoying. Mm-hmm. If you want to type into a terminal, which some people would want to, for example. If you like texting from Vim, then using it on a touchscreen is not ideal, right? So
they've literally made this for nerds because they have a Courage port or a 3.5mm headphone jack. They have NFC.
I love the way you call it, a Courage port.
It's a good concept, but I don't know. I'm always wary of crowdfunding. Like I mean, you look at previous Kickstarters that take forever to get there. By the time it gets, like, even though these seems to, like, they're going to ship soon, but so, like, a lot of these projects, the first few units, the first few batches usually have some issues, and then they fix them. And
one thing I will say to their benefit is this is not their first device, so they have
I've seen. Yeah,
this is their second device that is pretty much the same form factor, like sliding up keyboard and hardware keyboard and everything like that. And so they have a proven example product out there, and this is just a refinement or an improvement upon that. So it's not the case of you're just funding something that might arrive. Ooh, it's all concept, it's everything. Like they have.
Yeah, yeah. This seems like a fairly well rounded kind of product. Like it seems like it's ready, you know.
There is the Cosmo Communicator for about £700, which is similar. It doesn't have a sliding keyboard, but you open it and one of the sides is a keyboard. And that looks pretty good as well.
I find it funny that they're saying, like, this is the first device to ship with Lineage OS. And, like, the only reason they can say that is because the first device that was with Cyanogen OS is it was the OnePlus, and because of the whole debacle, they, like, rebranded and everything. So now it's, like, Lineage OS, and they can say that.
Well, also, I don't know to what degree they are doing it, but it seems to be that certainly the branding is appearing on the phone. They seem to be teaming up with XDA, and XDA developers are... anyone who has ever tinkered with flashing their own custom ROMs or even flashing an alternative operating system on their smartphone has consulted XDA. XDA is like the absolute center of knowledge when it comes to anything like this. So,
if you can navigate it, that
is. And I think it's a great thing, because, like, people there's so many geniuses there. Like, they'll usually, if there's, like, a phone that a lot of developers have, they will keep it alive forever and, like, will run Android 42 or something. Like, find ways to make crazy things happen. So hopefully,
XDA have such a reputation that even if this device shipped and they're like, okay, our company is going absolutely tits up. So the version of the operating system that came with the device, that's the only we're folding in, we can't do any security updates, we can't do anything like that, so it's stuck with whatever version of the operating system is on the device. The collaboration with the XDA will probably mean that because the device is in so many developers hands, that they'll probably keep it alive anyway, even if the phone manufacturer went away or went tints up, as I said. But
like happened with the original OnePlus One, the Cyanogen, the company that provided
and they just
software
replaced
went
it with what is it called, Oxygen OS. I should know. It's
but like I think the yeah I don't know if they released like Oxygen OS for the OnePlus One.
No, Oxygen OS is the name of the OnePlus version of Android.
Yeah,
but is it what version from?
Yeah, but the original OnePlus One didn't have Oxygen OS. It shipped with Cyanogen.
I still have one down in the drawer.
My drawer.
It still works.
I checked mine because it was broken.
I've won and I put Ubuntu Touch on it because it's an officially supported Ubuntu Touch device. So.
That's the problem with these operating systems. They are great, but the devices they support, like, there really needs to be a device that is both decent in, like, the modern in terms of hardware and not super massively more expensive than the normal Android competitor, which is difficult. Like, if you are making it, but it's more budgets.
Yeah, because then the company is making money off, like, farming information off of you.
This is probably the closest that I've seen in a very long time. I mean, it's very sure it's not the latest. It's not the latest and greatest hardware, but the it's very capable CPU. There's a hardware keyboard. It has your 3.5 mil headphone jack, which seems to be a rarity these days, and NFC, which also seems to be a rarity these days. And
no, not so much.
You
maybe for iPhone users.
You would be surprised.
I would be. This is my living. You're talking about. I collect phone information for a living, so I would be surprised if there was major like mid-tier to flagships that don't have NFC.
A couple of examples in the past when
there was a OnePlus version that they did have to get. I think it was the OnePlus
2.
4?
No, it was the OnePlus 2.
They had to not put NFC, even though it was in the previous version and the one after.
Yeah, but if you compare this device to like the PinePhone or the Librem or other devices, like it's a lot more, as far as hardware goes, it's a lot more capable device. Obviously, it might have like it might not be as open as far as like the proprietary stuff to get it running, but also the version the 600 something dollar version comes with 128 gigs of internal storage, which is a lot, like for, you know, and it supports SD card.
That is pretty cool.
Not a lot of phones these days. Like, I think none of OnePlus phones support SD cards. And
you can't get SD card. You don't have headphone jack.
No, this thing is
these days.
No. Yeah, my one does nothing.
Yeah. So it seems like it's a very capable device that allows you to you know, if they will develop stuff like Sailfish or Debian or maybe post-market OS, it's definitely a device to watch and see how it progresses.
Yeah, it's a nice piece of consumer grade kit that is not overpriced and just, you know.
And they also said I think in one of the interviews I saw, they said they're also working on dual boot, which I think will be great if you can, you know, use Android for your work related stuff, and then when you go home you reboot, like you have Sailfish OS or Ubuntu Touch or something like that.
I think it runs Docker, unlike Apple Silicon.
So moving away from phones, some Linux app news. GIMP is 25 years old. Hey. But Glimpse is 1 year old.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, they kind of I don't think they timed it that much, but so GIMP is like, everybody knows what GIMP, the GNU image manipulation program, is. It's
Linux Photoshop.
It's like the Photoshop. It's like Photoshop for Linux, right? Although it runs on Windows as well, I'm sure, and on the Mac, I think. And Glimpse is the fork that they weren't happy with how the development of GIMP is getting on, so they forked it. They changed the name, thanks God. I hate the name of GIMP, as I said many times on this podcast. And what they also did is what they do, which I didn't know. Apparently, portion of donations that go to Glimpse are forwarded to GIMP as well. Like they basically treat them decently as an upstream. That's what the Glimpse people say. Obviously, I haven't verified it anywhere because I'm not a journalist on anything like that. But yeah, it's interesting. And there's also a GIMP free beta version that people can try the new features of GIMP in. And I think Glimpse are thinking of creating like NX Glimpse or something like that, like some kind of a version of their own where the future is gonna come early or something. So there is a lot of development on the front of photo editing on Linux.
Yeah, it has a long way to go, I think. But yeah, I mean, GIMP is solid. It does what you want it to do. Glimpse isn't far off, to be honest. I don't really know what the feature parity is like, but on a deep level.
I think they changed the default layout of Glimpse to look like more like Photoshop, where GIMP has all this like windows that are not really connected together.
They did fix that recently. Maybe not recently, but I do remember using it before, and they removed, like, they have the option now to have it all in the one window.
Yeah, no, they added that quite a while ago.
That's a while ago, yeah.
which is pretty much like, which I think is what most people do the first time they launch GIMP. They figure out how to like make it in one window.
Sometimes it was cool. Like, sometimes you just feel like more an elite hacker, like you're in Swordfish or something. Like, you'd have like some of your like brush windows or your layers over on this screen, and like your image casually tossed on the other monitor.
What you do is you invite your girlfriend over so you can both type on the same keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. That's what all the kids do nowadays.
Hey, don't diss and smile.
But yeah, the stated aim of Glimpse, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do remember reading that their ultimate goal is to completely fork away from GIMP and to not use it as the code base eventually.
I think that, yeah, they're trying to make it a more advanced program, I guess, because there's a lot of things where GIMP falls short in comparison to like the more professional or paid versions like Photoshop.
We had Michael Tunnell on, and he basically summed it down, summarized it as destructive editing. Is Photoshop has non-destructive editing, whereas GIMP has destructive editing, and he says until they fix that, I can't use GIMP. Or Glimpse or anything based off it.
My wife is like she draws and stuff like that professionally, and she also says the same thing. Like, there's hopefully like that's where Glimpse is going eventually
didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say I don't know if you know much about Krita, but I don't know if Krita has non-destructive editing. Krita is more of the digital art rather than
more like painting, and
it's more stuff. Like Illustrator.
But, that's best used with like a graphics tablet, I believe. but yeah, like this is like I think after gaming, now this could be way off the mark, but like after gaming, I think these kind of industry standard tools are kind of the next thing that will draw people to Linux. Like, we've already sorted gaming out with Proton and whatnot, so, and lots more native games coming along. So, you know, nobody, you can not say to someone anymore, you can't game on Linux, because you bloody can. And we've established that, and that's old news. but with, like, I'm talking like the Adobe suite, like almost specifically the Adobe suite, because they kind of hold the keys there. That's what I'm really interested in now is seeing what you can do there. And that's the creative space, like the design and the like video editing, things like that.
It depends where your interest lies. I was recently pleasantly surprised that you can, you know, when I say, use Visidata for everything, that doesn't work for everybody. Some people need graphical spreadsheets, and I was like, how do you open a 100,000 line CSV if you can't use Excel? Apparently, and WPS Office on Linux opens it like without problems, and you can filter and everything. So where I'm getting with this massive detour is that I think that depends, like, what is the next best thing or next big thing? I'm not sure what is the next big thing podcasters are going to be talking about. And if obviously if Adobe releases Linux ports of Photoshop and Illustrator, yeah, sure, everybody's going to be talking about that. But I think I think it's more wider. Like, you have people who want accounting tools. You have people who want office software. Decent, like, even a decent mail client is still not like way off, but it's not that easy to find. Some people just want the desktop to be integrated properly, you know, like everything basically looking like it belongs there, like a unique, like a holistic set of tools. Programming tools are there almost, but you still can find small things missing.
I feel like you could talk about that topic for days and not have an answer. But like, if you want to talk about like, if you want to talk about like real big sexy headline grabbing things, then you're talking about gaming, you're talking about equivalents of like Photoshop, After Effects, Adobe Premiere, all that stuff.
And Office,
like Office, but that's definitely. Not, but that's not sexy. That's the thing. That's just
it depends. Like for me, Office is more sexy than Photoshop because I can't use Photoshop, but I'm quite good with Office.
Yeah, I mean, Office is kind of fine. Like,
no, you don't. No, you see, this is the fallacy. This is exactly the same problem. When you tell somebody who does photography for a living, say you can use GIMP, it's fine, and they explain to you exactly. And LibreOffice is not good enough. And I can tell you that as somebody who uses Office Suite for a living on an industrial scale and who has got colleagues who use Excel, LibreOffice, especially Calc, is not good enough as a replacement for Microsoft Office Excel. So,
okay, but you have OpenOffice.
No, OpenOffice is nowhere.
Only Office.
Only Office is okay, again, if you want to do a home budget, but it's not as good. And WPS Office was a surprise. It can do some stuff, but there is no tool, there is no one tool that can have it all. There is no one great competitor to Excel. And please don't think that I'm dissing any of these things. They're amazing. It's amazing that we even have what we have. But if we say that we shouldn't be comparing GIMP and Photoshop because it's not there yet, so let's be honest about Office Suites as well. They are not there either. And I'm pretty sure whichever expert you put on spot here and tell him, name your favorite Windows or macOS tool, do you have an alternative on Linux? Many of them, unless they are going to be maybe not professional programmers, maybe not definitely not system administrators, but like if you take anybody who works with audio, obviously, if you take anybody who works with I don't know really, I don't do anything that creative, but you cannot just narrow it down to.
But you already have like good alternatives. It's getting there. Like Blender is an industry standard. Like before that, you only had Maya and you know paid like, and now it took over. So it's definitely possible.
Maya 3ds Max and Cinema 4D rule the roost right now. Like that's like Blender is still a very tiny fraction of the industry. In fairness, even though it's amazing, don't like I'm Mr. Cheerleader for Blender over
but,
here. So
yeah, so it's I mean it's slowly but surely like things are turning. So it's really good to see that GIMP and GLIMP are alternative. It's really good to see that GIMP is finally moving on to 2020, almost 2021 with their support of GTK 3, which took forever, but it's finally
almost
here.
In time for GTK 4.
And then yeah, well, good. I honestly think
and I don't mean this to sound mean or to cast shade on any of the developers of any of these programs because they're all amazing people and they're great, doing great work. But I think Adobe will port the Creative Suite or whatever they're calling it nowadays to Linux long before like the likes of Kden Live or GIMP are on par with their software. Like, and that's the sad fact. But again, nothing wrong with the software. That's just the way it is. It's an open source project. They're commercial entities who have like armies of people laser focused on this shit every day. So of course they're gonna be better.
Unless people vote with their wallet and instead of paying like obviously like start investing like people, you know, use these programs as free programs, but the same if you take the if everybody took the money they pour into Photoshop and all these alternatives and pour it into open source software that can hire developers to work on these products full time, then I think the result will be much better.
That's not gonna happen though. Like you can choose between paying for a piece of software, or you can choose between giving somebody else money to finish their own software. I don't think so. You would have to, I don't know, but
it's. I can see where both of you guys are coming from, but DM is saying that if the amount of money that's being pumped into this was pumped in the open source direction, and then Mike saying, yeah, realistically, it's an ideally, but it doesn't really, I mean, how, like, a Creative Suite license is eye-wateringly expensive.
How much is it?
I think if you want more than like one or two, like if you want access to one of them, I think it's 100 a year, but I think it goes up from there, and it's quite expensive. I've heard people who are paying like 500 a year for professional photographers or something like that.
It goes up to four figures a year.
Yeah, it's like eye-watering expensive.
Yeah, but that said, this is an industry standard, and you can say what you like about the software or whatever, but if you know After Effects or you know Premiere or something, like that's a job skill, like that's an industry skill. That's what people are going to look for on your CV. So that's what you're up against. Like,
yeah. Also, like Linux doesn't do well in places where that are so massive, like so full of people that everybody does that, right? Linux does well, or open source does well, in spaces where it's a bit demanding and it's a bit niche, right? So we started doing very well in like for developers and sysadmins because there was not much else there, and we continue doing well. And if, for example, for some reason or whatever, people just like hypothetically, right? If people stopped caring about producing video at all, like nobody would ever do video apart from like apart from a very small niche of people, suddenly Linux be on the top because commercially it would not be viable. So the only people who could move it forward would be the enthusiasts. So Linux is doing, like, Linux is on top of the game when it can approach the game when the game starts, right? So we are not gonna stop being very good for developers because we are already there, and for sysadmins because we are already there. We grew with the niche, and when it turned really massive, we were already there, right? If there's a new thing that somebody's doing, something that I can't even imagine, but some new branch, and Linux jumps on it and pushes and enables the people to do whatever it is they want to do within that niche, when there's no money in it, we'll be on the top of the game there as well. If it's something that's got big, like, you know, photo editing got big before Linux was a thing, I think, even. Like, there was Photoshop in the 80s, wasn't there? And desktop publishing, that kind of thing. If it gets big before Linux gets to it, then we have too much catching up to do, and there's too much money to be poured into it, and that's difficult.
Yeah, but you need to make it viable for the big companies to use your product. That's like... I know that you said Blender is not there, but you could see the companies that are investing in Blender because Maya and the alternatives are...
I have a point on that, actually. the thing is, right, you would see the likes of Kdenlive or GIMP, which were basically started, like they were open source right from the get-go. They were community projects from the beginning. Blender is actually based on proprietary program. It started life as a proprietary program that was open sourced. So, that's why Blender is so much further ahead of the curve than a lot of the other programs in the similar kind of vein, creative programs or whatever you want to call them. Like, Blender is amazing. Like, the things Blender can do are just, and it actually, some people actually say it beats the industry standards in certain ways, like not everything, but in certain features, it actually beats like Maya and stuff. It has features that are slightly better. So you just don't get that. It's just adoption at this stage. It's there. It's a mature program. It's ready to go. It's perfect. It has certain things that you don't.
And it also makes a decent amount of money. Like it's sustainable, I think.
Oh yeah, like we've said it before on previous episodes. I mean, as they were announced, like I think Epic Games said they were going to be supporting Blender. I'm not sure if
Facebook,
Unity, Facebook, the people behind the Unity engine. I'm not sure, but did they say they were going to be supporting it as well? I think they did. So yes, it's that's definitely one that we can kind of hold up and say, yep, we're proud of that one. It's just a matter of hopefully we can get some of the more other creative apps up to the same standard.
Facebook joins the Blender Development Fund 4 days ago.
I'm really looking forward to see what Glimpse NX, which they call the next generation, is going to bring, because like GIMP has been around for 25 years. Like, I want to see what like fresh blood and fresh ideas, and like maybe not everything, but some of the things they're going to rebuild or restructure, and I think it will be great to see what they can do, not just a rename of GIMP, but like an entirely new program, and hopefully like they will bring stuff like non-destructive editing and stuff like that that really prevent graphic artists from switching over, because there's like the other stuff is pretty good.
Yeah, I don't think, it's the last thing, I don't think we actually need just the graphic artists. Like the stuff is there. Same for LibreOffice. Okay, you don't, if you are a massive pro at something, maybe you can't use these things. But for 90% of people, GIMP or LibreOffice are fine, because they do the things that you want to do, right? So, and those people can support the projects. They always have. You know, LibreOffice has been here for donkey's years as well, and before that, OpenOffice. And it works, and it doesn't need that kind of a professional investment. It's actually very good where it is. So that's...
Yeah, it's... It depends on what you want to do. Like.
Yeah, sure, but I came across a bit negative towards LibreOffice, I'm worried, right? And I don't want to say that. What I wanted to say for ultra-professional, for this one niche professional use that I have, it's not great. But for everybody else, 90% of people is fine. Same way, if I need to edit a photo once upon a Sunday, yeah, Glimpse for me, it's golden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's that top 5% of like power users that you have to please. That's what holds these things back, obviously.
Earlier when I said OpenOffice, I meant FreeOffice, which was the one that like that Manjaro started giving you the option. Yeah, I don't know why I said OpenOffice. I guess it's like somewhere in the back of my mind. Like,
so is WPS Office. It's also proprietary. Because
But it's options. Yeah, it's options, and it's on the.
If Photoshop
platform,
came
so.
To Linux, it probably wouldn't be open source either.
Well, of course it wouldn't be, yeah.
Oh, no. But anyway, I think we are coming up to the time. We've one more thing, actually. We're doing the competition, right? Okay. One more thing. Coming up to the holiday season, we have a lovely little giveaway. For you lovely people.
Speaking of Linux gaming being awesome.
Yeah. So we are giving away a copy of Conan Exiles plus DLC. Conan Exiles in English plus DLC. So yeah, this is a little competition we're doing. Now, is this the Linux native version or is it...
This is the proto version.
Okay, well, I'll take
it. It works very well on Linux, and the server for it runs on Linux.
It's got some cred.
So
then. Okay, because
yeah, so I spun a server for it that everyone can join, and I turned off like all the easy anti-cheat and all that stuff that prevents Linux gaming.
I mean. You kids and your action games, like unless it's a 4X grand strategy game, I really don't give a fuck. me and gaming are like two ships passing in the night.
There's no better game than Solitaire.
What's the ongoing joke in the Ubuntu podcast? Is it a turn-based strategy game with roguelike elements?
Massive
online multiplayer game with roguelike
elements.
Can I tell them about the competition now?
Yeah.
So the rules of the competition are: you have to be following us on Twitter. Give us a hashtag Conan Lads, Nothing to do with Conan O'Brien. Must have Steam.
It's,
obviously, because it's a Steam key.
Yeah, we're going to be giving you. I mean, we're going to be giving you a Steam key. So unless you have Steam, then there's not much use of you we giving you a Steam key.
Yeah, and people we'll find a really,
computer need not bother.
We'll find a really convoluted way of picking a winner. Mike will probably want to write a Python script in Vim that generates random numbers and then takes the factorial and divides it by, I don't know.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking up until the factorial, I was actually all the way with it. Yeah, definitely. Because what else?
Yeah, so whoever wins the game can join us on the server, and we mess around. It's a lot of fun. You die and you build stuff and you destroy.
So just a clean run through of the rules again. Be following us on Twitter. Use the hashtag ConanLads. Needless to say, you have to have Steam. We will be contacting the winner, and between this episode and the next episode, we will announce that we have a winner in the next episode. If you want to remain anonymous and don't want the shout out, then when we're contacting you, please let us know. Otherwise, we'll say, hey, X person has won it. But if you want to remain anonymous, we'll just say, we had a winner and we gave it away. So,
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, if you don't want us to call out your name, you can give us your rad Reddit handle or whatever, or you can just give us like some funny sentence to say. Like the Honest Trailers guy. Like when he says things in his cool movie trailer voice at the end.
Tell us why you won the game.
30 words or less. So yeah.
In a world where we have a winner.
Also, if you have the game already and you want to join us, just like tag one of us on the Linux Lads Telegram group, and we'll send you like the server information and stuff so you can join in on the mayhem.
Yeah, because DM is always like whipping everyone in the Linux Lads gaming chat. Like, come on, guys, play games.
I particularly this specific one. He's like, do you guys have coding yet? Do you guys have coding yet? Do you guys have coding yet? Do you guys?
He's like, my children have gone to bed. Quick, can I have fun now?
Pretty much.
So yeah, we'll announce the winner in the next episode, which will be our fancy doodle Christmas episode. Look forward to that. We should be doing a mashup with the Binary Times guys.
With the ex-Binary Times guys.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with something funny, but couldn't think of anything. obviously the Binary Times guys podcast isn't around anymore, but they are kindly joining us for one last hurrah. For the annual tradition of the mashup episode. So look forward to that in 2 weeks' time. Obviously last week was delayed because I had the black lung and everyone else had scheduling conflicts and stuff. So not the black lung. Not that one. Not the old 19 one.
He still has one functioning lung left.
Yeah, I have part of a lung left, so it's okay. You only need one. Socials. Before we get on to the socials, if you would like to buy a lovely mug or a lovely t-shirt with our logo on it, you can go to linuxlads.com/store. You can go to @linuxlads on Twitter if you want to talk to us there. If you want to talk to us on Telegram, you can go to linuxlads.com/telegram. You can get us on Steam. It's too long to call out, so I'll just go to Steam and type in Linux Lads in the community part and you'll find us there. Mastodon, you can get us on Mastodon, link in the show notes, or linuxlads.com/mastodon, whichever your heart desires. You can email us on show@linuxlads.com, and you can donate if you wish. If you don't wish to buy something, you can just give us money and get nothing in return by going to linuxlads.com/donate. I always feel a bit dirty reading out the socials because I'm such a grumpster. I don't play games and I don't use social media that much. So yeah, I'm an older gentleman in a young, slightly not as old gentleman's body.
strumming his banjo while rocking on the porch with his trusty shotgun leaning against the wall next to him.
Own land.
Not in my backyard, youngster.
We're going to give away a copy of the computer game, and then we're going to shout at you to get off our lawn.
Yeah, exactly. Or we'll just murder you with our big Conan swords. I don't know. What are you doing in that game? to see your enemies driven before you, to hear the lamentations of the women. I love that film so much. What is best in life, Conan? anyway, that's been it from us. DM, do you want to give us any shout outs? You're kind of a regular at this stage, so but
my stuff is Posh for Linux, or the_mentor on Twitter, and that's it. Or partial dot partial on Linux.
If you want to learn the magic of PowerShell, I tried for like a day, and it was interesting, but I don't think my brain works that way. But yeah, go to the PowerShell Telegram chat, because it is kind of cool. Like, everyone's very friendly there, and if you want to learn about PowerShell, my god, everyone will help you. So that's been it from us. I've been Shane.
I've been Connor.
I've been Mike.
And I've been DM.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.